First communicator, Leslie Flint's guide, Mickey. Second communicator, Stephen Ward.
This sound was recorded on the 5th of October, 1964, with Stephen Leslie Flint.
I'll be your sweetheart if you will be mine. All my life I'll be your valentine. The bells of Galilee, take me and be true. When I'm a man, my plan will be to marry.
Not bad for an amateur.
Beautifully sung. Are you there? Yes. Here's my doll. My lady love. She's your girl. So sitting down to croon. She's the only girl I'll groom and
love. You don't know that one as well as the other one.
No, I don't.
I am sang beautifully. Really beautifully, lovely tone. Do you do any singing up your way?
Sort of.
Do you have choruses and sing songs?
Oh, yes. Be my little Katie, all the way to navigate to the kitchen door. Mr. Booker Katie, with
oh, Peter, what's happened to your friend,
what?
The Yorkshire boy?
Oh, Albert. He's gone on.
Has he?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's not much for him to do around here. I mean, he couldn't find the margin. He's all packed up.
I would love to hear his voice again.
Well, I think he thought, well, he wouldn't find another one like this, but I'm now caught on to this old one party, so he cleared off.
You see him very often?
No, just occasional.
I like him.
Oh, he's a nice lad, but, you know, Well, he couldn't find no one, and there's no sense in hanging around here, was there?
No, of course not. Surely the whole world could find somebody.
Oh, there's loads of people who could be good mediums, but they ain't interested, so what can you do about it? Can't make someone be something they don't want to be. You can't make them interested in something they're not interested in, can you?
Mm.
If they show a spark of interest, then you can sort of flame it up. You should know that only too well, mate. You try to interest people and they don't show much interest or enthusiasm, so where are you?
I must say, Mickey's very funny at times.
Well, hold on, let this one get the baby in her frock. Wait a moment.
All right.
A new frock. You know what he means by that, do you? Do you know the meaning of that?
No.
Oh, it's a saying that Cockney women used to have, and probably other women for that matter, among the working class. If they natter too long, they're wasting time, whereas they could be doing something to earn something to get the baby a new frock, you know.
Oh, I see.
In other words, they're spending too much time.
Not so much of the mister and the doctor.
That's it.
Stephen to you.
Eh?
Stephen to you.
Yes.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
My goodness me, I'm quite sure some people listening to Mickey, they just wouldn't or couldn't possibly realize that it was someone who was so-called dead. So vital, so alive, and so full of personality and talks in such a normal, happy way that I'm quite sure a lot of people would be extremely puzzled.
Oh, yes, they would.
You know, honestly, it's fantastic to listen to him. I'm fascinated with him.
He sang quite prettily just now.
Oh, yes, I thought he
could
can.
Could you hear him?
Yes, sort of, but I think he does that deliberately.
Mm.
I mean, he has a motive behind most things he says and does. You know, it's an extraordinary character altogether. And, of course, I've seen him when he's away from the earth more, you know, and he's quite a different personality, in a sense, anyway. He's still got that chirpy way and happy way about him, but he not only is different, but looks different, too. Tall and quite different. A young man, actually.
Yes.
And a beautiful, beautiful soul. Great help to everybody.
He's not your side?
Oh, goodness me, yes, of course he is.
What does he do on your side?
Oh, he helps the youngsters mostly. He seems to spend most of his time with the young people, and he's very, very attracted to the animals, and spends a lot of time with animals.
Oh!
Especially not strays, you know, sort of animals that people have lost contact with, or the animals lost contact with them. At least animals have come over here and there. Owners are still on earth, and there's no sort of link, as it were, you know, and he sort of takes care of them and finds homes for them, and oh, he's a remarkable personality altogether.
Oh, I never knew that.
Oh, he would never tell you, of course.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Oh, it's one of his things, quite apart from coming to speak here, if he finds an animal that's lost, you know, for instance, an animal that's died, that is haunting, or I suppose you could call it haunting, or lingering round the home where it's been used to, and of course the people don't realize the animal's there, I mean, to them the animal's gone, and that's the end of it. But many an animal clings sometimes months and even years to the old home, and it's rather pathetic because no one seems to be conscious of the fact of the presence of the animal, and it lives a sort of lonely existence. But Mickey makes it a job of his to go round, and if he hears of a case, he'll go and collect the animal and make a fuss of it, and find someone over this side who'll take it and look after it, and you know, he's the most remarkable person.
Well, tell me some more about him, Stephen. He'll never be taught.
Oh no, well, you see, the whole point is that Mickey has allowed himself to become accepted as the sort of person that he is, or appears to be, that is,
yes.
And he'll never probably tell you all about his good qualities and his good points and the things that he does. I mean, he acts a fool and all this. I mean, it's part of his job in a way, but he's very deep and very sincere and is interested in humanity in every sense, and he's passionately fond of animals. And as a matter of fact, he's been taking care of several animals just recently that have needed compassion and needed homes, and he's found places. He seems to know everybody. He seems to root around and find people, for instance, people over here who, not that they're necessarily lonely, I wouldn't like to think that, because adults can soon settle here and make contacts and friends and there's always relations and so on, but he finds people that appreciate the fact of the companionship of an animal, and the new owner soon adjusts, helps the animal to adjust itself, but once he's seen and settled in, then he's quite happy and he'll come pooling around looking for more animals or what he can do to help them, you know. It's interesting, quite fascinating really, and actually, although this may sound almost peculiar, there is an organization, I use the term organization in a loose sense, but there certainly is a vast organization here of souls whose task it is to concentrate on animals rather than human beings, because there are innumerable millions of souls from this side who concentrate on human beings that there are these others whose task it is to look after the animals, and St. Francis, or Francis as you call him, he's very interested in that work because he's always passionately fond of the birds and the animals and so on. And he is, don't misunderstand me, I don't like to say he's the patron saint, because that's something he loathes to be looked upon as a saint.
Oh, I know that.
But the point is that he is, in a sense, the head of this vast organization that concentrates its efforts and its time and its love on the animal kingdom, and of course that means not just domestic pets or animals, but all manner of animals that are in need, and that is the animals that do live on. Not all animals do. Certain animals on the lower strata of being have no existence over here in the sense that they did on earth, but animals that have through contact in most instances of course with human beings, and also other animals, what you term the wild animal, which isn't as wild as it may sometimes seem, also has a place here. And there are vast areas of land, or vast areas of natural surroundings here, where animals do have their habitual sort of life. Of course, there's no breeding here. There's no sort of bringing forth new animals. I would don't want to misunderstand, but there are many, many animals that roam freely here that are so tame. I mean, that you can walk, for instance, in certain areas or certain places, and you will see all manner of animals who are so tame and so placid, and there's nothing ferocious or nothing about them which would cause alarm. Animals such as monkeys, for instance, actually, of course, although it's not generally realized, monkeys are very much akin to humans, and because of their higher link in the animal sphere or kingdom, they do go through changes. In fact, they definitely do have a life which in some senses is almost separate from many of the other animals. So it doesn't alter the fact that most animals that you know of do have a form of existence here. Some evidently do not, but a majority do.
What happens to those who do not I suppose they just...
Well, I think in what one might roughly term, I can't be exact on this because I don't profess to know all the answers, but it seems to me that animals on a higher strata definitely have a life here. They have a world, you might say, of their own, and they intermingle too with the human race. But the lower animal kingdom, and in that, of course, you can count such things as hedgehogs and rats and mice and reptiles and all sorts of lower. I suppose one shouldn't, but one has to say that in a sense these are the lower forms of existence. Yeah. And they do not, at least I've never experienced, I've never seen any. But when it comes to animals like the horse, the donkey, the elephant, even the fox, and so many other animals of a higher strata, they definitely do have, because they've got brains, they've got intelligence, and they've got great depth of feeling, emotions when on earth, and anything that has life from the point of view of having intense emotional reactions and feelings definitely does, as far as I've been able to gather, and I've certainly seen most animals here, do have a life in the world of their own. That I know this probably will be very puzzling to some people, and perhaps even to some people rather distasteful, but it's true to say that everything that has life, that really has contributed essentially towards the development and the evolution in life, exists in some shape or form here. It may not necessarily always, of course, be identically the same, because everything changes. It's so subtle, of course, and gradual change that possibly one doesn't notice it. And on certain spheres, there appears to be no change, whether it's with humans or with animals. But the point is that no one need fear. For instance, although everything here is physical, that is from the point of view that everything around and about one is solid and real, and one can touch it and know that it's solid, same as with animals, they have their natural natural appearance, and at first, of course, someone over here might feel very nervous. For instance, if they saw an animal, shall we say, like a lion or an elephant, and yet there would be an atmosphere which would soon make them conscious of the fact that the animal is perfectly harmless. You see, once you realize that what makes often an animal ferocious, or what makes an animal to be feared, is one of two or three things. It may be the fear of the human, because the human, by generations, through centuries, has hunted the animal, and has inbred fear of the human being. It's there, you see. And then again, it may be because, after all, animals, when at times, are driven in such a way that they have to kill to eat, to live, and they usually kill animals of a lower species. But the point is that very rarely will an animal, for instance, will not kill just for the pleasure or the sake of killing. It will only kill when it's desperate, or when it's, for instance, got into a corner and has to defend itself, or it has to either starve or kill to eat. Whereas man, of course, as we know, for generations has killed, if not for the mere love of it, because it's been expected of him, or he's been put into a position where he's had to, he's been dictated to kill. I mean, man often kills for sheer devil of it, and in many instances, of course, for the pleasure of it, like going out on hunting and shooting which is completely and absolutely unnecessary. Of course, they will explain it to the effect that, oh, well, they have to keep the numbers down, and if not, they would become too many, and so on and so on and so on. But the point is that nature has its own way of dealing with these situations, and if only humanity could realize it, and where human beings are concerned, of course, they have the intelligence, or should have, and they certainly have got it if they like to use it, how to keep down, for instance, the population.
Yes.
But the point is, the animals, they procreate, but then again, quite often, the animal kingdom is very aware of the fact that it's not necessary and it's not needful to bring too many into the world. It's an extraordinary thing. I know, of course, there are exceptions where you can point otherwise, but these are exceptions rather than the rule. The animal kingdom, you know, generally speaking, I suppose one shouldn't generalize, but certainly in the higher realms of the animal kingdom, there is a great law and a great understanding. Animals have a greater, in some senses, I know this will also be very unpopular, but it seems to me that animals in some senses have a greater understanding of natural law than human beings.
Of course,
human beings are always breaking natural law,
yes,
but animals are always adhering to it. And in consequence, if the animal kingdom were left alone in peace, it would evolve in other ways too, and it would certainly not be as humanity or man thinks of it as the wild. You see, the animals would be as tame if they could trust human beings. I mean, you do get birds, for instance, and you do get pets of other kinds that one may keep, that learn to trust man and expect man to do that which is right. And quite often when it's a pet, of course, the pet is right. The human being will do what is right by it. But there's so much distrust in what is called the wildlife of the human race, because humanity has been so utterly cruel and wicked to wildlife throughout the centuries.
Well, you see, on the earth too, they have animals as pets, lions and tigers.
There's no reason why an animal from the wild, once it has been made aware of humanity from the point of view of the humane and the attitude and the kindliness that a human being can give it. In other words, when the animal can feel it can trust the human being, it can become a very good friend.
Yes.
And indeed, it will become even more possibly a friend than a human being. This may sound outrageous to many people, but there's no doubt about it that an animal that loves its master, that trusts its master, will die willingly for its master. It will do anything for its master. It will sacrifice itself willingly. But how many human beings will do that? In fact, the animal asks nothing, only love and affection and something to eat and drink when necessary. But the human being is constantly wanting more and more and more, and taking from others. And indeed, whereas you can't trust people, you can trust animals.
That's quite right. These animals, horses and dogs, as they evolve, do they change their form?
Well, I can't really say with any absolute honesty whether this is so. I can only assume so, and I have, of course, been told so, that animals do, as they progress and go higher in their intelligence and their nearness to the human race, in other words, as they become absorbed, if you like,
yes,
I suppose that's what it is, into the human family, there are subtle changes. What those changes exactly are, I can't really say. Personally, I wouldn't like the idea of a pet dog that I've been passionately fond of, for instance, that it should change its appearance.
Yes.
Although I do realize this, and this is probably the change that takes place, it's not so much a physical or outward appearance, but it is the subtleness of the inner consciousness of the beast or the animal. I think that as they become more and more tuned into living with man, become more conscious of man's thoughts and intentions and desires, so they have greater regard and greater affection, and they are able to make themselves understood. It seems as if language, for instance, which is a tremendous barrier on earth, no longer exists, because it's possible for the animal to know what you're thinking, and it's possible for the human being to know what the animal is trying to convey, not just by, as it does on earth, an animal by its little ways and its little gestures and the wagging of its tail and the cocking of the head and so on, but the whole mentality is such that it's able to sort of transmit its thoughts and hold what you would term, or what anyone would term, I suppose, a form of conversation, which doesn't necessarily mean words, because actually, in a sense, conversation is more than words, and you use words to describe or depict various things, articles or feelings, emotions, or whatever it is, and you hold conversation. It's a sort of picturization. The whole point is that animals communicate by thought form, and we are able for the first time, I suppose, really, to know and understand them better. And as one knows and understands animals and the animal kingdom better, the greater one's regard and respect for it becomes. That is why, of course, we on this side, and Mickey, taking a case in point, is so interested and so anxious to help the animals while yet on earth, because it's just as important that the animals should be considered and helped, and everything that can be, should be done for them. And of course it is true to say that, frankly, there's no necessity to kill animals for food. I'm not suggesting that there have not been at various times the necessity when man is driven into a corner and he has to eat when there's nothing else, but that's very seldom. But the point is that there's no need for a modern generation, a modern people, and in intellectual peoples, at least we hope they are, that they should eat meat. It's quite unnecessary. And actually, it's wrong, because, well, for various reasons it's wrong. There are so many things that nature provides, natural foods, which are good for the body, which are good for the soul, in a sense, although this may sound odd, but it's true, because you can't think of one without the other. And if only people realized that, it would help to bring about vast changes in man's thinking and way of life. But the point is this, that if you give the body natural foods which it was intended to live by, there would be less disease, there would be less cancer, for instance, and eventually no cancer. I think it's true to say that apart from certain aspects of modern life, which of course are in themselves contributory factors to illness and cancer and other diseases, but certainly, if man lived on natural foods grown on from the earth, I mean the fruits, for instance, of the earth of various kinds, he would be a much healthier person. To bring up children on meat, to give them the taste for meat, to give them the instinct to eat meat is bad.
Yes.
And I think that so much meat, of course, contains poisonous matter, and contains germs which germinate in the body of the human being and develop into diseases and illnesses, and the animal itself may of course have some disease, and you may be unfortunate enough to have a portion of the body of that animal containing the disease part, and of course once it gets into your system it starts up disease in your body. Actually, if only people realize how necessary, how essential, how important it is to be vegetarian, to completely ignore and to give up eating meat, and not only from the moral point of view, but even from the point of view of health, it is wrong. In every sense, whichever way you look at it is wrong to eat flesh. And I think that man is asking for trouble. I mean, he's been doing this for centuries, of course, but I think that the vast majority of illnesses spring from meat eating. A lot of them certainly do, definitely do. There's no doubt about it that they do, because a lot of the animal food, meat that one eats, is, especially by the time you get it to eat, is already in a state of decay.
Yes.
I mean, the whole thing is that to eat what is decaying flesh is not only revolting, it's an insult to one's intelligence, it is by its very nature immoral, and to the taking of life to eat from that point of view, there's no excuse for it, because there are untold other things of natural sources.
Of course there are, yes.
The minerals from the earth are the essential things. I mean, if you were to eat, for instance, fruit, pears, apples, blackcurrants particularly are extremely good for one, tremendous vitamin qualities in blackcurrant. In fact, the fruits of the earth, men were to live on the fruits of the earth and the vegetation and the vegetables, all these things which have no soul, which have no sort of inner awareness, no life in the sense of a consciousness. I'm not suggesting there isn't a form. I'm not suggesting there isn't a form of life. Of course, there is. Everything is life, but fundamentally. But you see, there are divisions in nature. There are definitely divisions, and there are certain categories, you might say, and you can put. You put human beings in one category, the animal kingdom in another, you put the reptile kingdom in another, and birds, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on. But the earth was given for man to live by. And the things that were put upon the earth, that is, in the way of animals, the animal life, was not put there for man to kill, to slaughter, and to eat. But there was plenty of vegetation. You know, if one wanted to be biblical, and I'm certainly not biblical, but there's a great moral, if any people realized it, in the story of Adam and Eve. I'm not suggesting that the temptation, but the point of eating fruit, from fruit, comes goodness, not evil.
Yes. I quite see your point. I'm very glad you've spoken about this.
It's a very difficult subject to discuss, particularly in a sense, because I'm a newcomer here and I'm only beginning to assimilate knowledge. But already I've seen and I've realized that so much that man himself is concerned about is man's own fault. I mean, there's hardly anything that happens. In fact, I'd go as far as to say everything that happens to man that is unpleasant, whatever it may be, whether it is a little or big thing, whether it is an enormous war, for instance, or whether it is disease, or whether it is even accident, or what appears accident, or what is considered accident, everything springs from man's own foolishness.
Yes.
Man himself creates the instrument of his own unhappiness and his own, you might say, sickness of mind and of body. Everything in life is there that is good, but man does not know how to use good. He prefers quite often to stray away on other paths and to take unto himself the things which he knows within himself are unnecessary and quite often are ruinous to his mentality, to his dignity and to his health. It's so obvious, and I think that the vast majority of people really do deep down when they think realize it, that they are creating by their very thoughts and their actions their own destruction, whether it is in a major war or whether it is in regard to illness, sickness, disease, corruption of any kind. You see, the point is that man has not realized that there is a natural law. And if he lives by natural law and obeys natural law, he will live a natural life and a healthy life. But so much illness and sickness, whether it's of the mind or the body, is definitely due to man's own foolishness and his own stupidity.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Anyway, one day perhaps I'll be able to tell you much more detail, but I'm very interested particularly in the animals, and I know your love of animals, which also naturally tempts me to talk a lot more about animals, because I too am very, very fond of animals, always have been, and I adore animals, and I often see animals here. Actually, it's very interesting and sometimes almost amusing. It has its funny side too, because although a lot of people on your side will think this all sounds crazy if they ever listen to this recording, but nevertheless, I have seen sitting around here when we have been communicating, not only dogs and cats and monkeys, but elephants and even stupid though it must sound to you. A picture of this would be wonderful to see, but even things like giraffes. I mean, you may say to me, and a lot of people may say to me, a giraffe. Now, what the hell is the good of a giraffe? Who wants to see giraffes on the
outside?
They're
lovely creatures.
But they are graceful, and in some ways, perhaps some people think they're not so graceful. But there is an intellect and an intelligence. There is a brain there. Maybe it's a small brain. But they have feelings and emotions, and they have tenderness, and you know, it's an extraordinary thing. I cannot think now. Of course, I suppose at one time I didn't think very much when I was on your side. A lot of us didn't. I mean, life was so fast, there were so many things that held one's interest, stupid things so often. But if ever I did think deeply, I think that I must have thought how awful it would be to be in any world if there were not animals. Because to me, animals are so much part of life, and it's a joy to know and to see here animals of all kinds, and to know that they are, as they indeed are, so tame and so friendly and trusting. Mm. And indeed, it's because they have entered into a new condition of life here where man himself has changed, which of course makes all the difference. When one has been here for a very short time, that is, as you term time, of course, man does change. He has to change. He sees the futility of clinging, in the majority of instances and cases, to the old thoughts and the old ways of life. There's so much that happens. And of course, as it's happening to man, in a sense, perhaps in a different kind of way, but nevertheless it's happening to the animals. It's a wonderful feeling, and the most wonderful feeling of all, I suppose, is for anyone who's loved, sincerely, genuinely, deeply loved an animal, and goodness knows many people have and do, and I can quite understand why, because an animal has so much love to give, it has so much affection in its makeup, that really it is a person. And to know that one's pet here, and that they love you and they trust you and they come to you and they are with you, it makes life wonderful. It is all a contribution to the joy of life. To me, a hereafter such as this, without animals, without our pets, without those little people who've been so dear and near to us, it would be impossible, unthinkable. It's a wonderful thing. I wish I could paint for you one day a picture just as I see it and have seen it. It's so wonderful, it's so thrilling, it's so exciting, it's tremendous, you know. This life is tremendous, Rose. No one need worry about coming over here. It's the most exciting, thrilling thing that could happen. It's something that will happen to everyone. Of course, naturally, some people's reactions will not necessarily be the same as others. A great deal depends on the individual, a great deal depends on the kind of life they've lived, of course. But nevertheless, for everybody, no matter how low they may have sunk, no matter how deep they may have fallen, you might say, no matter how stupid they may have been, it doesn't alter the fact that eventually everyone reaches up. No one is lost. It's a wonderful feeling to know that there's so much love, an abundance of love, that there are so many souls with outstretched hands to help you, to pull you up out of the mire. And goodness me, I can't tell you what a tremendous, thrilling, wonderful experience it is to live, to really live. In a sense, I feel now that I'm living for the very first time. And to know that I'm not living it alone, but living it with people that I know and like, and people who know and like me, and above all, in a sense, although perhaps I shouldn't say above all, but it's so true in the way I feel at the moment, to know that the animals, the pets, and the dogs, and the cats, and all the little things that have meant so much to one's life, the little things that have stood out. And indeed, I look back on my own childhood when I had a little dog. I mean, it was a great blow to me when the dog died, but to know that that dog is here and it met me, I mean, it's one of the most comforting things.
Oh, do tell me, he met you, did he?
Yes, one of the most comforting things. And, you know, really, it is a great comfort. I can't tell you what a great comfort it is to know that when you come here, not only are you met by people that you've known and loved, but come trotting along some little animal that has meant so much to you for a few years.
It reminds me of my queenie.
Well, I'm sure you'll have your queenie here, don't you?
Have you seen the queenie?
I'm sure that's the queenie that I've seen here several times.
Where?
Yes. Yes, when I've been here. As I told you, sometimes there have been animals present.
And a greyhound.
Well, I've seen greyhounds, I think I've seen in this room at different times, if I can put it in the sense of in this room, but in this area, call it what you like, I've seen, I think, every breed under the sun, and plenty of hinds. Plenty of hinds.
You have?
You know what I mean, no particular breed, but that means nothing here.
No, that doesn't matter, but my beloved racehorse that I had, Queenie.
Yes, and I picture him racing across. When you come here, you'll be thoroughly enjoying yourself.
Oh, dear.
I'm scared, but anyway, I'll
meet you again on Thursday.
Oh, I'm glad of that, but I really, quite honestly, when I first came tonight, I hadn't got anything in mind in particular. You know, I mean, sometimes I try to collect my thoughts and say, well, I'll talk about this or that, you see. But tonight when I came, it was as if, in a sense, as if my mind were a blank. But somehow, I don't know, I sort of get going and things come, you know. Anyway, I must go. God bless. Bye-bye.
Wonderful.
Bye-bye, Auntie.
Bye-bye. Nicky.
Yes?
You never told me.
Oh, well, I'll tell you everything.
Oh.
You don't.
Oh, you
are.
Oh, you. I look on you as more than a pal. I look on you as a what? I don't know.
Well, why do you think Leslie's got Tina?
What?
Why do you think Leslie's got Tina? It hasn't been for her impressing him, he wouldn't have had it.
Really?
No, nobody wanted a little girl, did they? Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, darling.